702.
Africa at a glance.
Thembisa Fagota joins me now. But Thembisa, thank you so much for joining me. You've written an article titled Ramaphosa's Peace Mission to Ukraine Could Be His Saving Grace. Why? Saved from what?
Well, saving grace for himself. He finds himself in a much more complicated position because of his flip-flopping and clumsy foreign relations efforts towards Ukraine. So he needs to save himself from himself. He was not invited to the G7. He's rapidly being sidelined by the Western countries. We're also told that South Africa might just be expelled from the Africa Growth Opportunity Act, which is AGOA, when it's extended or renewed in 2025. So he finds himself in a much more difficult position. We know now that he's undertaking this six-nation peace mission tour. One wonders why it didn't involve the AU, which is 54 African states. But this is Cyril Ramaphosa. Today we saw Naledi Pandor meeting with foreign ministers from the BRICS countries. He has openly said to the world that Russia is South African friends. So yeah, I think this one could help Ramaphosa resuscitate his lost reputation.
The decision for this mission, this peace mission, felt or sounded to me like a reaction. In other words, it wasn't something that had been previously conceived of. It sounded to me like a reaction to the fears that arose after Ambassador Brigadier's outburst, if you want to call it that, to try and give the impression that South Africa under Cyril Ramaphosa was still non-aligned, because the accusation from the United States through the lips of Brigadier was that you say you are non-aligned, but here you are supplying arms to Russia. Whether that's true or not is something that is still to be established. But that is the position that Brigadier held, to the point where he said, I stake my life on it, or something to that effect. My question to you is, how well conceived is this mission, and is it really going to achieve what they say it's going to achieve? And perhaps you could tell us what they think it is going to achieve.
Well, first of all, it's a non-starter, because both countries and leaders of those countries, Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky, have said, Putin has said he's not withdrawing from the territory that is conquered since this war started. And Volodymyr Zelensky said Putin must get out of the territories. And those are the conditions, and none of them are willing to compromise on that. So we have to see if Cyril Ramaphosa will be able to convince them, at least as a starting point, to be a bit flexible when it comes to that, which is unlikely. And also, looking at the number of countries and the size of countries, both economically and demographically, with due respect, I'm not quite sure whether they'll make any difference or do something different that Turkey and other countries who are much more bigger in size and in economy will be able to impact sense into both leaders. So, but Ramaphosa, having said that, Ramaphosa is known for his, he's a deal maker, he's a respected negotiator. So hopefully he's going to speak some sense to these two leaders. But looking at what's happening on the ground at the moment, both countries have dug in their heels, particularly Russia, that continues to bombard Ukraine. Day before yesterday, they sent about over 30 or so missiles into Kyiv during the day, with the intention, of course, of creating harm and killing people. So it's going to be a very difficult one for Cyril Ramaphosa. But there's another school of thought which is emerging, and that is perhaps this is Vladimir Putin using Cyril Ramaphosa as a proxy to go and negotiate, because he has to try and save face. So whatever Cyril Ramaphosa is going to be doing in Ukraine will be directly coming from Russia.
Who are the six countries that are going to be part of this envoy?
It's Egypt, South Africa, Uganda, Zambia, and South Africa, and Senegal as well. Those are the six countries that are going to be part of the of this envoy. And if you look at the, if you look at these countries, one really wonder whether these countries could really speak sense, given their, role, size, and importance in global politics. Whether they'll be able to speak sense to these people, which makes me believe the second school of thought, which suggests that perhaps it is indeed Vladimir Putin who's behind this effort. The fact that AU is not part of this effort, he needed a group of countries that he can control and speak through in terms of him negotiating, because he's not winning the war. He's failing in this war of ill-equipped students who decided to go and pick up arms to defend their country. 1 year and a couple of months later, the Russians are still struggling to capture some parts of Ukraine, and they're not in any way winning this war. In fact, we see Ukrainians now pushing back. So it's an embarrassing moment for him. Moreover, you have Finland that has since joined NATO. One wonders then what was the whole point of pushing back on Ukraine. Sweden is also just about to join NATO. So you have two more countries joining NATO, which countries that share the border with Russia. So he hasn't won, and Ukraine itself is now over militarized. There will never be Ukraine will never be the same. So you have a much more stronger neighbor militarily henceforth, and a neighbor that's going to be continued to be supported by the world in terms of pushing back on Russia. So it's been a waste of time, except, of course, that lives have been lost and property has been destroyed.
Talk to me about your assertion that these six African countries led by South Africa could be a proxy for Russian sentiments and interests. Just go a little deeper on that. Explain that.
Well, it just simply doesn't make sense for President Cyril Ramaphosa, a person who's always been supportive for multilateralism and AU. He was at some point the chairperson of AU. And one will, South Africa's, Africa's always, Africa's foreign policy has always piggybacked on the AU because of the weakness of African countries, whatever they've been doing ever since the establishment of the AU in 2000, has always been on the back of the AU. And then for the first time, we see Cyril Ramaphosa taking an independent position and inviting these countries to join him. And in fact, if you look at the recent history in terms of engagement with Russia, when Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia, he actually visited some of these countries, then it makes you kind of believe this school of thought that perhaps during those visits, he was there to convince them to do exactly what Cyril Ramaphosa is doing, which simply doesn't make sense.
Then why do you make the assertion in your article that this could be saving grace? Saved from whom?
Saved for himself. What I meant was this could empower him. Of course, if Russia wants him to succeed, he's going to succeed. And if he does succeed, he will come out of this as the man. And chances are, if the school of thought that this whole thing is supported by Russia, Russia has got the power to allow him to succeed. And if he does succeed, that will really raise his stature around the world.
Any mediator in any conflict must enjoy the confidence of both parties at loggerheads. Do you think that Cyril Ramaphosa enjoys the kind of respect, at least from Zelensky or the Ukrainian people, that would be able to broker such a peace deal? Or is he seen as a puppet of Russia?
Well, he is seen as a puppet of Russia, but at the same time, South Africa, since the times of Thabo Mbeki, have embraced this quiet diplomacy. We know that notwithstanding the overt efforts towards Russia, we've seen delegations going to Russia. South Africa has been engaging Ukraine. And we also know that South Africa has hosted Ukrainians in South Africa outside the media. So they have been working with the Ukrainians. And the fact that Volodymyr Zelensky agreed to this meeting without hesitation also suggests that there has been some sort of communications between the two countries. So South Africa has been open in terms of its relationship with Russia, but you know, covertly they have been engaging the Ukrainians, and there has been delegations. I know of one that visited South Africa in the past at least a month and a half ago. So those two efforts have been going on. Having said that, South Africa has taken a public platform in terms of its flip-flopping and clumsy diplomacy in this regard. Naledi Pandor has been very vocal in calling Russia, South African friends, of course, without consulting with all of us. And she has made those remarks. But importantly, South Africa decided to engage in those joint drills, if I remember, on the very same day. The Ukrainians were commemorating a year. So you wonder what was the wisdom behind that. And the fact that you go on international platforms and you start calling Russia your friends, speaking to the international media, and there's been so many reports written around the world that South Africa has not, for lack of a better term, spun in terms of correcting the messaging that came from the reports. The Lady R saga, for example, and the claims of Robin Bigoty, so much has been written on it. And we haven't seen much South Africa going on an offensive in terms of rectifying its position. All they do is to speak to us in this echo chamber and expect that the world would understand what they're trying to say. And you've seen and listened to the tone of senior officials within the Department of International Relations, people such as Clayson Munyela, very casual, you know, speak as if South Africa is South Africa Pty Ltd, you know, forgetting that, you know, we all belong in this country and own it, and we deserve some sort of, you know, serious representation given our stature within global politics and the world. But what we've seen a department that is not fit for purpose, a department that fails to communicate, and a department that's entrusted with foreign relations and you know, power to represent us in this regard, but continues to, you know, send mixed messages, at best, angering some of our traditional allies, particularly the trading partners around the world.
Explain to me what the essence of the peace brokering message would be. Right? I mean, we already know that the non-negotiable from the Ukrainian side is that even before we have these conversations, the Russians must vacate those areas that they have annexed. And it is a non-negotiable of the Ukrainians. And on the other side, the Russians are saying, no, we're not going to move. These are territories that belong to us, whether as a result of the military process or because of historical reasons, whatever the story is. It appears that already there is no meeting of minds. So what is it that this African delegation is going to say to try and unlock a process whereby some sort of discussion is going to take place?
Well, I wish I could answer the question, but I don't see any possibility of these talks succeeding. You know, notwithstanding what you just said regarding the other opinion or school of thought that it's probably Russia that's pushing for it because it finds itself in a corner, and in order for it to save face, it has to find a proxy to begin to negotiate. But other than that, I don't see any possibility of having these negotiations succeeding. But the other thing, of course, the agency of the matter, at least from the Russian perspective, according to some scholars, is that, you know, the Wagner Group has become just too big, and it continues to get empowered with all the weapons coming from Russia. And you know that about a couple of weeks ago, the Russian army refused to supply additional arms to the Wagner Group because they've become much more powerful. So there are people who believe that Wagner Group might just come back to Russia and create some havoc in that part of the world. And its time is right now to begin to negotiate. So that's the agency that has pushed these initiatives. But other than that, I don't see any possibility, again, given the conditions that both countries have put forward or insist on. I don't see any possibility of the Six Nation Peace Envoy making any difference or achieving peace in Russia, between Russia and Ukraine.
Tell me more about the Wagner Group. I read a lot of commentary about the Wagner Group. What is the Wagner Group? What are their interests in this whole equation?
Wagner groups are soldiers of fortune. They're mercenaries. They're also creating havoc in Africa, countries such as Central African Republic. They are at the moment in Darfur, in Sudan. They are accused of working with Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, who is the leader of the RSF in Sudan. So in Africa, they've been known to be causing havoc. After some failures of the Russian army in Ukraine, Putin decided to invite them to go and fight and augment the manpower in Ukraine. And ever since, they've been fighting in one particular city called Bakhmut in Ukraine. And they've been, you know, struggling to push back, as I've said, these young kids who have got no experience in fighting, but, you know, committed to defending their country. And after almost six months into the war in that particular city, they've finally made some inroads. So they are soldiers of fortune, there to make money and nothing else. And chances are now, we believe that some other countries, including the United States, are having negotiations with them to turn against Vladimir Putin.
Where do they come from? Where does the Wagner Group come from? I mean, I'm asking this because I remember that we used to have a thing called the executive outcomes emanating from here in South Africa, right? Remember them? Made up of former South African Defence Force operatives from, you know, from different you know, regiments, guys from the Kufut, from the Buffalo Soldiers, that made up a lot of the guys that ran Executive Outcomes. And the South African mercenary group was involved in many a conflict throughout the world. Where does the Wagner Group come from?
Wagner Group was established by one Putin's very close ally. His name is Yevgeny Prigozhin. And they've since been fighting on behalf of themselves, because it's all business. But because they're closer to Putin, of course, they've been getting a lot of concessions and contracts from Putin. They're in Africa using all the bilaterals and multilaterals and multilaterals that exist between African countries and Russia for them to operate. They've been contracted by various dictators in Africa to fight on their behalf, especially with the ever-present threat of coups because of dictatorship in some of these African countries. So they come in quite handy in terms of helping to sustain and protect dictators. In Africa, they're quite popular, and as I've said, they are now known to be operating in the mining concession of business in Darfur, and they are working with Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo against the people of Darfur. In fact, the conflict that's taking place at the moment in Sudan involves some of their members. So these are people who are hellbound in terms of creating havoc and destruction around the world, all in the name of making money and ensuring that Vladimir Putin and Russia remains on top of the food chain. And as Russia resuscitates in its presence in Africa, they come quite handy because they do work, as I've said, with its dictators. So it's a mercenary group, a well-known group that fights anywhere around the world, especially in some of the countries in the Balkans. They've been involved in pushing the agenda of Putin and Russia. So there's nothing really constructive about them, except that they are just, you know, gangsters and criminals.
Is there any evidence of their presence in South Africa? I ask the question because there have been some who have argued that South Africa seems to be the next platform for the proxy wars between large powers in the world, you know, for what we are seeing in Sudan, for example, the proxy wars that have taken place in Ukraine itself between NATO and Russia. Some have suggested that South Africa is becoming, at least gradually so, the platform for that proxy war in South Africa. Is there any evidence of the presence of the Wagner Group in South Africa?
Well, you know, it's not only the soldiers that are involved with Wagner groups. We all know that they've got so-called consultants. Sure. Over 200 consultants are spread throughout African countries. And unfortunately, amongst the countries that are mentioned where they are Wagner group consultants include South Africa. Unfortunately, what they're doing here, we don't know. But it's likely, of course, that they are housed in the Russian embassy, because they work very closely with the Russian government, but they're involved in most countries in Africa. They're in Zambia, Zimbabwe, Senegal, Angola, and Rwanda. And the information, of course, is freely available online. You can just go Google and you'll see exactly what Wagner Group is all about and where they're involved. So over and above them being soldiers of fortune, they claim to be businessmen, and they've got these so-called consultants who go around looking for businesses. But over and above everything else, they are there to make money, and they'll do whatever it takes to make money. Unfortunately, in these other countries outside South Africa, they've been very destructive.
Yeah, I suppose if one follows their strategy throughout the world, it would be surprising for them not to be in South Africa for one reason or the other, at one degree or another. Now, President Cyril Ramaphosa has initiated this process. When are we likely to see it operationalized?
We don't know when they're going, number one. It was announced, you know, it was announced during the visit of the president of Taiwan, if you remember. I mean, Singapore. So it's a very surprise announcement. So we don't know where they're going. All we know is that the minister in the presidency, Kumbuzo Ntseveni, has been to Russia. Whether she was there for other businesses, we don't know. But people and reports suggest that she was there to pave a way for these possible negotiations that are going to be taking place. So we don't know when this is going to happen, but discussions, of course, are already taking place, and we can't rule out the possibility that today, with Sergey Lavrov visiting Cape Town and having discussions with Naledi Pandor, those discussions were also held, even though Naledi Pandor, of course, told us that they didn't have those discussions, including not having a discussion about the ICC implication if Vladimir Putin visits this country, which, again, I found it very insulting for South African intelligence. But anyway, we don't know when they're going, but we'll have to see. We'll have to wait for that announcement to happen. But at the moment, none of us really know precisely when the mission will be heading towards Ukraine and Russia.
There's an interesting sort of Damocles over the neck of the economic neck of South Africa. There is, of course, the ICC's warrant arrest for Vladimir Putin and the tap dancing around that's taking place. We've heard of a blanket immunity that's been given for all of the delegates that will be part of that summit in August. But there's also the question of the Lady R story and whether or not there were arms that were taken into that ship to Russia or wherever, or whether there was something that was offloaded. These two issues seem to have the possibility of a serious economic consequence for South Africa. Does, from where you sit, Thembisa, the world see South Africa as a neutral or non-aligned player in all of this? I think that the world sees our strategic importance on the African continent, but are we understood and seen as being non-aligned, as being neutral in a genuine sense?
Well, whatever the you know, whatever the facts behind these allegations, particularly the ones that were made by Ambassador Ruben Piketty, and which, by the way, I don't think the Americans will make such a claim without backing it up. It's one of the most sophisticated when it comes to intelligence. So there is an element of truth in terms of something was loaded, I believe. But of course, we have to wait for the Commission of Inquiry to find out precisely what has happened. But the fact that even Cyril Ramaphosa himself has decided quickly to have this inquiry in place and start doing its work, it means that he's concerned that indeed there was something loaded into the chip. Whether it was by South African officials or not, or it's private individuals, that's another story. But we'll have to wait and see. But I think we stand to lose a lot as a result of this. And one of the major loss that we could have is being kicked out of AGOA. And if we're kicked out of AGOA, which is the African Growth Opportunities Act, we are in big trouble. So it's interesting and very concerning times for us as South Africans in terms of what will happen and what are the implications of all of this. And the world, of course, it continues to isolate us. As I've said, that you have this messaging that proliferates, and South African communicators at high level fail to go and counter those narratives. The story of Lady R, for example, and the claims that were made by Ambassador Ruben Piketty, they were reported throughout the world, and some of the most important media institutions, including New York Times, Economist, etc., ran with the story. But guess what happened after that? South Africans failed to communicate, unleash some of their spin doctors to go and counter this, you know, get a chance or ask for opportunity to write to respond to some of these reports. And I haven't seen any, and I'm quite close to action, and I read about South Africa and Russia on a daily basis. And none of the South African government communicators have even attempted to write a piece clarifying the position of South Africa in this regard. So the narrative is proliferating, the messaging continues, and unfortunately it's not governments that do business with South Africa. It's business to business, and you know, governments facilitate business, but it's businessmen who do business with South Africans. And at the moment, what you have this skepticism of them not wanting to further invest in this country because of this uncertainty. And unfortunately, there's nothing out there which is trying to convince them otherwise. So we are in a very serious situation as South Africans. You see what's happening to the rand, continues to take a dive. And unfortunately, the more we resist in giving answers, the more we resist in communicating with the world, and the more we rub shoulders, smile to cameras in front of Russians and call them our friends, the more we are going to find ourselves in this diplomatic quagmire.
Look, the United States doesn't come out smelling of roses in terms of statements it's made in the past. I mean, we had that bomb scare that was supposed to have taken place in Sandton, which destabilized a few things for us here in South Africa. And there was, I argue, a legitimate gripe by the South African government to say, listen, if you knew about this, perhaps you should have talked to us at a diplomatic level. But there's been, in the past, things such as the weapons of mass destruction allegation against Iraq's former leader that became untrue, and many others that we could point to. I hear you saying to me that the United States has a very sophisticated intelligence space, but we've seen it not successful a couple of times. And at them pushing a particular propaganda sort of agenda. What do you make of those who say, yeah, we hear the conviction in Brigadier's voice, but, you know, they haven't provided evidence of what they say happened. And yes, the dithering of the South African government suggests that there are questions to be answered. But the United States has not given any conclusive evidence of what they are saying, and the potential consequence of that is quite grave for South Africa, as you've already expressed. Why have we not seen evidence from the United States that would then, I suppose, start a process of a communication offensive by South African communicators?
Well, firstly, you know, this kind of answering will risk me becoming a spokesperson of the United States, and I don't want to be that. Suffice to say that America has had a lot of problems in the past and have made a lot of mistakes, and we have to condemn them and continue to do so. Because, you know, as you correctly say, some of the intelligence that they've provided has been found wanting, particularly that when it comes to weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
But what has happened in Simonstown is an allegation that our president and the government has, to an extent, accepted that something did happen.
Yeah.
Something did happen in that ship.
Yeah.
And something has to be investigated. Hence, the commission of inquiry. And I think whilst we're doing that, we must not forget where we stand. As South Africans, we stand for justice. We stand against, you know, violations of basic human rights, whether it's in Iraq, Afghanistan, or anywhere else. And I have been in the past been criticized of taking a certain position because I simply do believe that Russia is an aggressor. But I've also retaliated to say that I was at some point before I became an academic in the forefront of protesting against atrocities that were committed by the Americans. I was in the forefront when it came to condemning the America on Iraq and the invasion of Afghanistan, etc. So we have to remain that. And at this point in time, as South Africans, there is a temptation, of course, to always say we are going to side with Russia because America has always been found wanting when it comes to human rights.
Yeah.
And my answer has always been, but we also protested and criticized America at that particular point. The agency of now, as Barack Obama will say, is that you have an aggressor, and that aggressor is Russia. And pictures don't lie.
Yeah.
We have a country that continues to violate other, you know, go to other countries and poison people simply because they speak against them. And those that dissent against the popular public political opinion get jailed. And we have to condemn that. So this has been the South African position. And this has been, for me, what should be characterizing the so-called non-aligned position. The biggest challenge with this current non-aligned position is that it seeks to support Russia, and it's very silent on condemning Russia.
So when this happens, if it does happen, this delegation of six countries to Russia and UK, and let's say that that process does succeed, and please God, I hope it does succeed, if it can create a situation where there is peace in that region, and perhaps avert all sorts of other possibilities of war in the world, what then would the world say of South Africa? Would we then have a president that elevates his status in global politics as a peacemaker? And what would that mean for South Africa?
Well, imagine if that happens. We have found ourselves in this position because of very few mistakes, and those few mistakes have cost us dearly. It has also cost Cyril Ramaphosa invitation to attend G7 in Japan. So if he can afford somehow to find a solution in this current challenge, you can imagine what will happen to South Africa. South Africa will once again be in a position to command respect, as it was the case during the days of Nelson Mandela and, to an extent, Thabo Mbeki. But at the moment, again, because of the media reports and all the flip-flopping in terms of our foreign policy, South Africa finds itself on the back foot. We are constantly criticized because of our position. The economic benefits that we have are now threatened. We see what's happening to our economy. The dollar is also taking a dive, as I've already said. So Cyril Ramaphosa's success in this regard could just, you know, place him in a different position. It could once again bring him into the fold, and not only respect around the world, but respect within the African continent, which, by the way, most of them are also in support of a position that will, you know, condemn Russia, and they're supporting a peaceful resolution in that part of the world. But Cyril Ramaphosa, unfortunately, has made a number of miscalculations in the past, including, you know, that those statements that contradicted each other 48 hours later, when he said South Africa was going to withdraw and later on change and said, sorry, I didn't mean that. So, I mean, these things are reported. You don't say them and expect that they'll just disappear. You say them and they get reported. And if you don't, you're not going to have any countering narrative. They proliferate. And at the moment, unfortunately, wherever you go, I'm currently in Istanbul, I get questions on a daily basis about our position in Ukraine, because people do feel that you support Russia. And I keep on saying, but we've got an unaligned position, but they don't know that because we are tone deaf in terms of what's the world's reaction. And we have this echo chamber that we're living in South Africa. And we think that because we're going to report to Opry Masango's show, the United States and the rest of the world will get to know what we have said. But we need to go out and start speaking to other nations and the media in general, particularly international media, about what's going on. And unfortunately, we are not in a very cozy position right now. Cyril Ramaphosa is, you know, gradually being rejected by the leaders of the world.
Thembisa Fakude, thank you so much for your time, my brother. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.